Welcome, everyone, to another episode of State of Readiness. I'm your host, Joseph Paris, and today we have our guest, Pavel Sabek, and he's a thought leader and growth expert working with individuals and corporations to build cohesion across their organizations. He's founder of TM2 Ventures and a former business head at S&P Global based in New York. He's an expert in delivering strategic expansion objectives for Fortune 500 companies. Pavel previously was a consultant at State Street and an analyst at Aegon Asset Management. He has lived around the world and worked in the UK, Europe, Africa, and Asia, helping to grow businesses in developed and emerging markets. Pavel has been published in the media, Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Financial Times, and so on, as a broadcast contributor to CNBC and New York Stock Exchange. Nice. He holds the financial risk manager designation by GARP, winner of 40 Under 40s for research from the M&A Advisor Association based in New York. He's also an investor, actor, producer, starring in Ari Taub's 2019 film, 79 Parts, a professional ski coach, instructor, and a keen surfer. Pavel graduated summa cum laude with a bachelor's in science and mathematics and economics, and holds a master's in science in finance and investment from the University of Edinburgh, where he's also an official associate partner of the business school. And he studied entrepreneurship at Harvard Business School. Welcome, Pavel. How are you doing today?
I'm excellent. Thank you very much for that fantastic introduction. Very humbling.
My pleasure. Well, I mean, it's only fantastic because you've accomplished so much. I mean, you know, you and I have known each other for a couple of years, and you've certainly walked the earth and seen some amazing and interesting things, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the I think it's probably anecdotal and interesting to state, when we first met, it was a quite highbrow polo event, right? Which I think it was my first ever one, so I was treading new territory. But we walked out onto the turf at halftime, and what is the term that you use when you stand on the divot?
Stomp the chuckers, I think it is. Or
that's the one. That's the one. Like, yes, that. And I think that's where we had a good conversation, and you know, we started our friendship. So yeah, that was fantastic.
And you introduced me to Pims.
Indeed. Oh, good old Pims. But right now, I don't think Pims is a very sociable thing, right? So now I suppose we have to do a virtual Pims through Zoom or other mediums, which is a rather interesting world.
Yeah, I see that you're in your new office, I guess, right? Yeah.
Oh, yes. This is my state-of-the-art office, my small apartment in New York City, where I do have, or I've been trying to set up a working from home digital readiness, where I have some lights and I have a USB compressor mic, and I think a lot of people are being faced with this right now. So slowly and surely, I'm getting up to speed with this to make sure I'm still as efficient as I was in the previous world that we used to live in.
You know, I was just speaking with a gentleman right before this podcast about that very thing, efficiency, and you know, we're talking about, you know, maintaining a level of efficiency that we had before, but I might even suggest that our level of efficiency has actually increased, paradoxically, in certain respects.
I agree with that, because I think there's a challenge, and there's obviously, as anything, when you try and adapt to something new, there's a ramp-up period where you have to learn. And so we can obviously talk about that, but I think in terms of being more efficient, one of the main elements is that working from home, you can control your own environment. And I can hear people saying that straight away, well, I have kids and I have a dog and I have all this, which is, it is true that it's very challenging. I'm not saying it's not, but when there was a countless surveys that have been done primarily since 2010 around asking people simple questions like, where do you get the most work done? And usually they come out with a location and a time. And the locations that come out are on the porch, in the library, in the kitchen, and right at the bottom of the list is in the office. And location time, they usually say at the weekends, at nights, or really early in the morning. So it's this distraction that you get within the office that now is no longer there. But the challenge of countless meetings, and, you know, employees not being visibly there, managers are now concerned of what are they actually doing with their time. So that is a challenge, but I don't think I really agree with that mentality of, you know, keep focus and keep an eye on the employees.
Yeah, you know, I was the same gentleman. We're going through the same conversation or similar conversation, what he's doing. And when he's doing a video meeting, you know, he's doing a lot of Zoom meetings, all right? He's doing a Zoom meeting. He's making sure that people turn their cameras on. And I asked him why. I said, you know, is that, you know, to monitor them? He says, not necessarily to monitor them, but to make sure that they stay in the moment. You know, because, you know, if you're in a conference room, everybody's looking at each other, and it's not like you have the opportunity to multitask and, you know, go off topic and do your own thing. You know, you're really in the moment. You're staying in the moment. When you're hiding behind telephony, it's very easy to say, well, this doesn't really apply to me, so I'm going to go off and do something else. So he just has, you know, people turn on their cameras just for the meeting. It's not like, you know, after the meeting, they have to stay, you know, keep their cameras on so you can make sure that they're working. I mean, it's not a level of micromanagement, but it is a way of just making sure that everybody is focused. So what do you think some of these, you know, this is a black swan moment, obviously, right? You know, this is going to be transformational on many, many levels, like so many global challenges that have faced us, you know, in the recent past, you know, be it 9/11 or the Great Recession. You know, what do you think, you know, we should be paying attention to? I mean, because...
Absolutely. So I think that now there's obviously so many challenges and so many issues that we're facing, and too many to obviously discuss on this podcast. Ultimately, when it comes to the workforce and how organizations are constructed, I think that needs to change. And it needs to change dramatically. So as leaders are trying to face the challenges of this crisis, they need to put people front and center. And by that, really, it's making sure that culture is now more important than strategy. Organizations such as Netflix and Facebook and many out there have achieved that while achieving profit and achieving growth, and it can absolutely be done. Boston Consulting Group and many consultancies out there are actively working on this with many organizations. So I feel in terms of the type of workforce that we have, fairness, benefits to all, flexibility of work, autonomy, these are really important. And with Tell Me More Ventures, what we're looking at is kind of, I'll throw four of the key aspects that we're looking at. One, and the first one is really communicating openly with empathy and also with reciprocity. Secondly, it's to do with cohesion rather than competition. You know, within organizations, a lot of organizations tend to be quite competitive internally and don't help one another out. Thirdly, it's adapting to this new kind of distributed workforce. In other words, working from home, which we've touched upon. And then finally, as I know, states of readiness, that your book, which is a fantastic book, I'm going to use that term readiness again, which is digital readiness. We have to get more digitally ready. And so I work with a variety of partners within digital transformation and work efficiency to try and achieve that with some corporations across the world. And right now, this working from home mentality or this working from home culture is something where, yes, you can be more efficient, but I think there needs to be guidelines around that. And one quick thing that I would say is, you know, speaking to a lot of organizations, the employees say that in this short period of time, this month that's gone past and we're working from home, they've found that the meetings are less valuable and quite frankly exhausting because of this lack of physical proximity to people and that social energy that you get from people. So they're finding that quite difficult. So streamlining these meetings to be more efficient, more concise, and more effective is going to be absolutely critical.
Okay, so there's a lot there, all right?
Yeah.
Some of the challenges that I, you know, see right off the bat, you know, if we're not meeting face-to-face, I mean, you know, human beings are social creatures. You know, we need to socialize. We need to interact. I see the challenges with, you know, video cameras and telephones being in our way that, you know, we might have a tendency to become more distant, less collegiate. Not so much that we have, you know, call it bad intent, for lack of a better term. I don't like to be, you know, subject or objective, but or subjective, I should say, bad intent. But it's just the way it is. If we're, you know, not speaking face to face, we're naturally going to think of ourselves as being distant. So how do we reconcile the need for, you know, being collegiate, being collaborative, being open, and the simple fact that, you know, you're a 7-hour flight away from me right now. Mm-hmm. How do we reconcile that?
Well, there's this term that's been thrown out into the business lexicon, which is M&Ms, that are the cause of some of the disruption and lack of efficiency, meetings and managers. And they have to be addressed. I think with meetings, it's sometimes quite comic and funny how meetings are, you know, put together for the sake of meetings. A small change in that would be to do a roll call, of course, at the beginning of a meeting and state why everybody is there, to give the people the opportunity to leave if they shouldn't be there and not waste their time.
And I just want to catch on that for a second.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and we'll tie this back to culture. I mean, for these meetings to be efficient, and I think probably for any meeting to be efficient, you know, more is better. Or I'm sorry, less is more. All right. Mm-hmm. Less people being involved in the meeting is probably going to be better for the meeting. And you made the statement about allowing people to leave if they realize that they're not supposed to be there or they're not adding value. Now, wouldn't a proper meeting have an agenda and a specified outcome that's desired, a decision that's going to be made at the conclusion of that meeting? Now, I'm not a big fan of status meetings where people just, you know, get together and say, I'm working on this and I'm working on that. You know, because by the time it gets down to the 20th person, everybody's bored to tears and everybody just wants to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, if we're having a meeting, you know, shouldn't we have that agenda up front, even if it's telephonically? And if a person has nothing to contribute to that meeting, just be able to tell the meeting organizer, listen, this is not for me. I'm not going to show up. Instead of even appearing.
Yeah. Absolutely. It should, but unfortunately, I don't think it is. You know, I think that there is particularly... Now, there's
You're
nothing
in New York,
to do about
aren't
this.
You?
I've been counting six every day for the last couple of weeks, and it's dropped down to three. So we're improving.
Yeah.
It should, but it doesn't. And I think that isn't anybody's fault necessarily, because you have so much information and so many meetings. It's very difficult to keep a track of what's this meeting for and what's the agenda. I absolutely agree that there should be an agenda that's set out beforehand. Sometimes that can even be sort of convoluted and complex in terms of the agenda, and it takes you longer to put it together to read than anything else. But I think, to your point, is that should absolutely happen. And then there should be a reinforcement when people are there, because they're juggling so many things, it was hard for them to really know what exactly the meeting was about. And you have many instances where people are in the meeting going, oh, actually, I shouldn't be in here, or I could be doing something else. And if you don't have that open communication, as I mentioned before, with that empathy, then you're going to, you know, not waste an hour of people of just an hour, but you could, if there's 10 people, you're wasting 10 hours. So if two people drop out, 2 hours are saved and they could be doing something that's a lot more productive. Yeah. So I think that kind of fostering that encouragement to be open is really important. And then also at the end of the meeting to say, did we find that useful? And then everybody gets a quick, and it needs to be very quick, and it needs to be sort of curated, but did everybody find that useful? And people should be open to, in a positive, constructive way, say no, in order for the efficiency of the group to increase.
Right. So I think we'll take a break for a moment. And when we come back, I'd like to talk about how to be empathetic, you know, the necessity of being empathetic and the power that that empathy can bring to a team under the existing circumstances. Mm-hmm. So we'll be right back. You're listening to State of Readiness. I'm Joseph Paris, and our guest today is Pavel Sabat.
This episode of State of Readiness, sponsored by the Operational Excellence Society, a think tank, a creator and aggregator of knowledge and know-how, serving businesses and professionals who wish to learn more on the various topics which combined comprise the discipline of operational excellence. Learn more at www.opexsociety.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to State of Readiness. I'm Joseph Paris, and our guest today is Pavle Sabic. Pavle, we're talking about stress and a new way of doing business. You know, people distributed rather than, hanging around the water cooler in conference rooms. You know, what are some of the challenges that, you know, senior leaders might face, challenges to culture, challenges that the employees might be undergoing right now? You know, the stress that they might be feeling?
Absolutely. So I think you mentioned before in terms of meetings, and now we're so far apart and not in the same room, how do we foster that sort of level of communication? And far be it from me, who's you know, not an admirer of process, but I think it's a critical element, or having processed and documented things, right? Documented ways of working in the organization. Having worked in State Street and having worked in a bank, absolutely everything is documented. And it can be very painful, but obviously it's for contingency there that somebody can pick up where you left off. So now the fact that everybody's working from home, there needs to be a better documentation, you know, about everything, about the IT support, around processes and approval. Everything needs to be documented in order for people that are working from home now to not be stopped, not be stopped in their track, because they can't just go over to the manager and ask. So I think documentation is going to be very, very important going forward in this distributor workforce. And more than anything, because we're limiting the amount of time we see one another, or we are limited in the amount of time that we see each other in the workforce, people can't be what they can't see. And so it's crucial that managers are leading by example now. And this whole thing, don't do what I do, but do what I say. Now that's coming, you know, becoming even more important, that the managers have to lead by example, and there needs to be more empathy around how people are working from home, in terms of the individuality that people have of how they work from home, and not to, you know, put in meetings for the sake of meeting and try and keep on top of people. And that's very, very critical.
Right. Now, how about, you know, managing stress? I mean, because now, you know, there's going to be, with every transition comes stress, right? You know, we've made the, you know, a transition from working, in closed quarters to distributed workforce. Mm-hmm. But not only that, you know, people have personal stress. I mean, you know, it's, we have to remember why people are working from home, right? So, you know, they might not want to work from home. They might want or crave to be in a closed environment. They might be stressing about the circumstances around them. They might be stressing about a loved one that has taken ill. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, opportunities for stress to manifest itself in a person's life. And of course, then you have leadership and management that may or may not be in tune with that stress. I mean, if you and I were you know, colleagues, and we, you know, met each other every day, I would know when something was on your mind, when something was distracting you. And even if you're not in a good mood or stressed, I would recognize that because I could see it. I could see it in your body language. Once the camera's off, I can't see that, you know? So, you know, how are people going to be able to cope, or what's the importance of management to be cognizant of that occurrence of stress that might be happening in the workforce?
Well, one thing I am seeing, and I'm sure you're seeing this as well, JP, is that now, instead of starting the meeting with a fairly frivolous discussion and maybe about the weather and then moving on, people are genuinely asking, how are you? How are your loved ones? And so I think that empathy is being fostered more and more. I do not believe that we are going to go back to anything remotely similar that we were before. If 90% of the workforce all of a sudden within a month is now working from home, coupled with what you just mentioned of this horrible crisis that we're going through, the empathy needs to increase, because workers, and even if some are right now, they're throwing themselves into work. They're working from 7:30 till 6:30 nonstop. They're being very productive, which is great, but you can only run so far in one tank of gas. Right. So the way that
why are they doing that? I mean, that might be their way of coping with stress. You know, I'm
absolutely
stressing out, so I'm just going to put my head down and move it forward, and just, you know, I'm doing this, therefore I'm not thinking about all this other stuff.
Right, because all the other stuff you cannot control, and you can control your work. So now you throw yourself into an area where you can control, or at least you have input on some sort of control, rather than this crisis where you really don't have anything. So it is very tempting. I suffer from that. Everybody's from throwing themselves into something they can control. And I think this is a recognition overall in work culture that, and getting a little bit technical, but this is what we work with organizations, is adapting from and nurturing the parasympathetic nervous system rather than the sympathetic nervous system. So the sympathetic nervous system being the fight or flight, which tends to go to a competitive environment, which I mentioned already within the workforce. While there's a parasympathetic is to do with rest and digest. And so right now, with so much stress, it's even more critical to take the opportunity and to structure your day the same way for relaxing as you would for being productive. Not many people will write down or put in their calendar, okay, I'm going to take a 30-minute walk or a 15-minute walk here. I'm going to water the plants in this bit. I'm going to do things that I feel good about that make me relax, so that I can come back to my work fully invigorated.
Right.
And I think that's where companies should be supporting their employees, because right now burnout is going to be very high, and mental health is going to be it's going to be spiking. It's going to be hugely critical right now.
Right. Now, what about the risk of being connected 24/7, and colleagues or leadership or whomever thinking, geez, the person's working from home, they live at home, they're accessible 24/7. I should just be able to pop in any old time, and my expectation is that they're there to answer the call.
Yeah, you're right, and I think that happens a lot now. I think employees or managers are saying, well, you're not going to be anywhere, so why are you not picking up that phone?
Yeah.
And that is only going to be counterproductive over time. And I think that's where organizations have to lead by example, and the people have to see before they can be. And they need to see their managers and organizations doing that. It's, of course, a very tough one, because it's not like an organization to sort of start talking about have a nap and start meditating in the middle of the day. But I think that does need to change. And there's many, many organizations, Aetna is one of them, who you know, fostered that and encouraged meditation and encouraged yoga. And it's very critical for organizations to do that now, because they can't see what their employees are doing.
Right.
And they need to take care of their health. So I hope that is going to change. I don't think there's any way out of that, given that we're going to go from whatever happens after this crisis, we're not going to go back down to the minimal amount of people that are working from home. It's now going to be a accepted cultural work shift.
Right. Now, in some manufacturers that I work with, we institute a thing, especially on the shop floor, called the daily huddle. Okay, so you have work centers, you have departments. Before they start their shift, all the shift members get together and they spend 15 minutes just talking about what they're supposed to accomplish for the day, any challenges that they see. It's not supposed to end up being a status meeting that lasts for hours and they try to fix problems. It's a huddle. You know what I mean? Mm. It's, if you think about huddles in football,
like that. Yeah.
American football, we get together for 15 minutes. We get together for a moment. We set up the play. We execute the play. And, you know, perhaps with people being distant, maybe they should institute, even, you know, white-collar people or people that aren't on the shop floor should institute a daily huddle, where the very first thing at a predetermined time every day, everybody gets together for 15 minutes and no longer.
I couldn't agree more. We did that at Aegon every day at 9 o'clock. We would do a 10-15 minute huddle, and it would be that. It wouldn't be a status report. It would be what's happened overnight. What are you guys thinking about? What we should be reporting on? It was, so that, paint the picture, it was analysts, portfolio managers, senior portfolio managers, and business heads. So the fixed income team would do that, and the equity team would do that. Right. And sometimes nothing would come out. But what happened is it became an institutional habit. So as it was continuing, more and more people would want to think about something cool and innovative, a way to to do some interesting research. And it was great because it wasn't formal. People would bring their coffee, their lunch, their snacks. They would, you know, they'd have a chat, but they would talk about what can we achieve and what do we want to achieve. I think they're incredibly useful, a check-in like that. And I would love.
Yeah, I think, you know, with, you know, at Aegon, you guys met face-to-face because you're all there. But I think it's going to be really important when people are now, you know, not connected, you know, physically connected. I think, you know, reserving 15 minutes at the very beginning of the day, very first thing that happens that day is that everybody gets into a huddle. And if something precipitates out of that huddle that needs further attention, it should not be addressed in the huddle, but at some separate time with just the people that are involved. So it's really going to be important to control, you know, the start and the stop time and the content of the huddle. Otherwise, those things could take on a life of their own.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, JP. And I think that a lot of the stuff that I've said, that is absolutely critical, is that somebody has a straightforward, direct way of saying, you've got whatever, if there's 10 people, 10 minutes, you got a minute each, let's do this. And, you know, when they're like, okay, wrap it up. You've said 45 seconds, you haven't said much, right? Carry on. There needs to be that openness. And as you do it more, and as people know that it's only a 1 minute and you have to get your point across, it tends to go from maybe a little bit of an anxious thing, oh, I've got to get my point across, to then it sort of peters out and you just get used to that institutional habit.
Same
with these sort of meetings, that if people are, it's always about setting expectations. I remember one of my first jobs was at a creperie, and it would sell burgers and fries and obviously crepes. And I learned there that it's so important to set expectations. So if there was a fair going on and the queue was huge, sorry, the line for you Americans was long, then what would happen is if somebody would wait 18 minutes for a burger, they would lose their mind by the time they come halfway down the queue and say, how long is it going to be?
Right.
And they would be really angry, and it would be hard to manage those expectations, and the stress would come into the coffee shop, and it would be very difficult. But if I pop my head out and said, guys, it's going to be 25 minutes for burgers, really sorry about that, I don't remember one instance when anybody complained. They either said, okay, we'll come back later, and they left. But 85% went, oh, that's fine. Because they know now that they can pull their phone out, they can talk, they can have a call, whatever it is. So I think a lot of it is setting expectations about what these meetings are about, what's going to happen. And people can quickly adapt to that. Everybody is an adult that comes into work. And I think we need to give people more autonomy and more direct communication for them to understand what's happening.
Yeah, and I think that's the root cause of a lot of the anguish that people are feeling right now, is that the expectations aren't set. You know, they don't know how bad, how long, you know, anything is going to be. They don't, you know, the instructions that were, you know, being given are often convoluted or even contradictory. You know, first masks didn't matter, and then they did matter, and then they only mattered for, you know, keep other people from getting sick, and now they, you know, you need them all the time. And, you know, they can't even decide on whether or not to wear a mask. I mean, you know, those are baby steps. And I think that feeling of being untethered, not knowing what the expectations are, it makes it impossible for people to become comfortable because they don't know how to prepare.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And it's, you know, I started this pandemic when the kind of shelter in place or the lockdown started, the quarantine started, looking at the news every day because it was just changing on such a rapid pace.
Yeah.
And now I've sort of stopped that and controlled that a lot more, which is excellent, and put the phone away for certain points of the day. I generally don't check the phone for the first couple of hours in the morning until I do my primer. But I think, you know, that Napoleon Hill, that quote where he says that whatever the mind can conceive and believe, the mind can achieve. And when you're left in a state of uncertainty, unfortunately, human tendencies tend to go to the negative.
Yeah.
And that's a difficult attitude to fix, and an important attitude to fix. And a lot of the people that have great success in their careers change their mental attitude, first of all, before they change the world around them. With this unprecedented situation, I think that, you know, organizations should be cognizant of that, should try and set as many expectations as possible. Of course, it's hard because right now that might be okay. okay for certain organizations, but in 2 months' time, there could be major layoffs that they didn't expect that. So there is a fine balance between that sort of communication.
Yeah. All right. So we're getting towards the end of the program here, and I got just a couple of questions left. TM2 Ventures, what's its superpower? What's it do?
The superpower for TM2 Ventures is really how do you establish within a workforce for them to have autonomy as well as challenge in order for them to be, for employees to be a lot more efficient. So it's all about the employee experience. And we go into organizations and coach employees how to think like employers. A lot of the companies we work for go to an ESOP model, the employee stock option plan. And they, it is in some organizations, they're actively doing what Netflix have done, which is to give very good salaries, but then give them the option to swap salary for stocks for the organization. So they can directly link their own success to the success of the organization, their own economic power to the power of the organization, which fosters cohesion, again, that I wanted to say, cohesion, reciprocity, you know, camaraderie, these kind of things. TM2 Ventures looks at how we can get to that and be honest with one another. Like, we can't really all love one another in an organization. It just doesn't work like that, right?
Can't do that in a family.
You can't do that in a family, exactly. If you take the hard approach and put too many boxes and too many dotted lines, that doesn't work either because you just obfuscate things. If you try and go softly, softly, and everybody loves everybody, well, that's not true because maybe the content head of content, the woman is phenomenal at her job, but you don't get on with her. Or maybe she doesn't get on with the head of product in terms of personality. But what you need to do is get that empathy and that understanding. And so there is tactics around that in terms of how to communicate, how to listen. One of my partners that I work with called Andrew Mellon, he has a fantastic book that he's working on, which he's calling BS on Busy. And it's that tendency of just running through things and trying to keep busy and show how your input is really productivity. So essentially some organizations are measuring productivity in terms of input and not in terms of output. Right. So we're kind of addressing all of these things head on and helping organizations have a more cohesive dialogue and open dialogue around how the employee experience works and how they can be more efficient.
Super, super. And one last question.
Yes.
Who's Walter?
Walter is a fictional yet aspirational character that I came up with a friend of mine called Johnny Smith, who is a designer from the same village or similar village in Fife, Scotland as myself, and Via Fang, who's an illustrator from Asia who studied in Edinburgh. Walter the Wanderer is a children's book that I published last year, and it's a story about a curious Scottish otter who travels the world spreading compassion and kindness. And really, it's about accepting different cultures, accepting different languages, and overcoming life's obstacles, which I feel is a very important message for kids to learn. So it's for kids between the ages of 3 and 5.
Excellent. Walter the Wanderer. That's what it's called.
Walter the Wanderer. That's right. You can get it on Amazon and all good online bookstores.
Okay. Super, super. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Pavle. It's been a real great
Thank
pleasure
you.
Having you on this this first video podcast that I've ever done. Hopefully it turns out well, but I have a good feeling about it. You've been an outstanding first guest. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much, JP. It's been a humbling experience and an inspiring experience. I really appreciate your time and having me on the podcast.
My pleasure. My pleasure. You've been watching State of Readiness, a podcast set as a fireside chat with Joseph Paris. Thank you for joining.